Welcome to the Penguin Magic Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Tate. Joining me as always, my good buddy, Nick LaCapo. Nick, how you doing?
I'm good. Good. Woke up. Got my... It's coffee time.
Is it coffee time?
Coffee and podcast with Eric time. Yes. favorite time of day.
It's become like a weekly thing for us now. Where we just like, we each grab a cup of coffee. We talk about the tricks that came out. We have another conversation and then we move on with the rest of our work.
Is the smoke in the frame here? Barely.
A little bit. Yeah, anyway. Is that an ember mug?
You know what? I had to go to the car dealership yesterday morning and get something done in my car. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, maybe I left my Yeti mug there. So this is my Patriots mug.
Oh, okay.
It's my backup. It's my backup mug. Sure, everybody's very excited about that.
Oh, yeah. Hey, look, everyone knows that the Penguin Magic Podcast fans are rabid about our mug choices.
That's right. Actually, yeah, the mug collection that I've obtained throughout the years of Penguin is pretty robust. You know, going from it's a pretty common Christmas item around the office, but then also if you've been to enough conventions, like there's Magic Live mugs floating around, and I think there's a Genie mug floating around, and yeah, there's mugs everywhere.
I think I have performed enough.
Yeti mug has been found.
Good.
Been found. Yes. Okay.
I've performed at the Chicago Magic Lounge enough that I have like a full set of Chicago Magic Lounge coffee cups to like have coffee with like four or five friends.
Did you know there's a new Chicago Magic Lounge performer shirt?
What?
Mm.
I need to get back there.
Yeah. Ben gave me one when I stopped in randomly a couple weeks ago. So yeah, it's the same shirt except it says performer on the side. You do need to go back and grab one.
I will. And for those of you who watch us on YouTube, I am a man of my word. I've got shelves this week.
Mm.
Yeah.
I also appreciate your MetaQuest case or holder because I need to do that.
Yeah.
Mine is just like on top of my printer.
Well, you know, I've been playing with it more, and you know, our buddy Sean Dunn's like hosting some like magic chats, and I thought like, hey, I got this nice little studio now. I may as well start like doing some VR stuff here.
Yeah, there is a magic group meeting on in the metaverse. If anybody out there wants to join it, I'm sure you're welcome. So last time I was in there, I was sitting there watching YouTube videos with Joe Reinfleisch. So
wow,
I don't know. I mean. Yeah, it's a weird place, but VR is that's what it's all about.
I think the most amazing thing is that you have a printer.
Yeah, yeah, and it doesn't have any ink though.
It's a giant paperweight.
No printer has ink. No. I swear I buy the damn ink and then it just evaporates. I swear I never use it.
Well, let's get to the magic news of the week. We had two things that come out. Going Up, which we talked about a little bit last week, which is a fun sort of, it's like an ambitious card packet trick.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
It's fun.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a really fun one. It's super visual. Mm-hmm. I guess after posting like the reel I did of doing it, it got different reactions from like non-magicians. Like I got comments from people that don't usually comment on my videos that are just saying like that's impossible.
Yeah. You
know, so I don't know. I feel like it elicited a different reaction from people. It's a good one. I like it a lot.
It's got some real clever gimmicks involved with it, and well worth checking out. And then the other thing that's coming out is actually I just saw it advertised this morning when I woke up. Was Gripstick.
Oh, that's out. Gripstick.
I think this is one that is well worth talking more about. I know sometimes we can get a little like advertising in this, but I think Gripstick is worth sort of chatting about because it's not often that like the internal Penguin team like plays with something over and over and over again. And then we all kind of go, hey, maybe this should be a product. But this is a roughing stick. And if you're unfamiliar with a roughing stick, it's usually like a substance, like a wax or something like that, that you would rub on the back of a card or two cards. And then when the treated sides are put together, it acts like rough and smooth. And it's different than a spray because you can actually get like a really nice, you can get it to the point where the cards almost handle like one single card.
Yeah.
And
yeah, for sure.
you can apply it in different patterns so that when you're pressing down on most of it, it handled like the two cards stuck together, handle like one card. But if you press down and slide your fingers apart in another area, they slide apart really smoothly and easily. It's pretty neat. I'm the face of the project. I'm in the tutorial, and I teach you like not just how to use it, but like how to make some of the classic decks, like the Invisible deck, the Brainwave deck, Pop-Eyed Popper, a Mirage deck. There's a really great Cards Across that you learn from Craig Petty, which is fantastic. And then a bunch of like other stuff. And the thing that's really exciting about it is there have been other roughing sticks out there, but I don't think one has been as specifically formulated as this one.
It's the one that they use to make tricks that you've bought.
Yeah.
Most likely. So even like if you do have any rough and smooth Penguin Magic type tricks that you feel like, I don't know, may have worn out after a few years or something, this is basically just pick this up because you can touch up. I mentioned that a lot in the tutorials that I have, like, hey, if you have, you know, something that can do this, you can just touch these cards up and it will work like new again. So yeah, you should probably just have one of these. I mean, these are one of those things that you just kind of need laying around if you're performing and doing tricks as much as we are.
It's pretty useful, and it was really rewarding to make all of those trick decks. Like, I'd never made my own Invisible deck before this project. I'd never made my own Brainwave deck. And like knowing that I can just take a regular deck of cards and like get that set up gives me, I'm playing with more and more gimmicks these days. I'm not moving away from sleight of hand, but I am starting to incorporate more and more gimmicks.
Well,
and this is just a banger to have.
Just to make a card disappear.
Yeah.
It's such a valuable thing to own. Some of my first stand-up stuff was like dependent on making a card vanish, and because you can do miracles with just a card vanish, make it reappear anywhere you want, force a card, make it disappear, bring it back in. That's a great trick. And if you've never done it with like to make your own gimmick, to do that is really fun if you've never tried it. So yeah, you should pick one up if you need it. It's a good thing to have around. It never goes bad, right? So just pick it up.
I think one of the cool things too is because So like the workshop people played around with lots of different formulations. I mean, they were melting waxes and adding additives and doing all kinds of crazy stuff. Like, those guys went real deep.
There was a day when there was a meeting about this product, and there was like, how many samples were there? They were lettered like A through L.
Yeah, it was. Right? There were easily a dozen samples that we all had
We all had to take them home and like test them out and like report back. I don't know. There was like a dozen of us or something that did this, and like it was the top two or something that I'm not sure how they were chosen, but we did have to rank them as a in terms of like stickiness. And like, I was like, well, this is my job.
So there's like a regular hold and an extra hold, which is the extra hold is stickier. And so it kind of allows you to just like tune the cards to your preferred feel, and like if like wherever you're performing, like if it's more humid or dry somewhere or whatever, like it's, I mean, I go over everything in the download, but it's kind of a cool product, and it's like it's made by magicians for magicians. It's not like a repackaged piece of beeswax. It's
is true.
Like watching them make it looks like them like pouring over like a cauldron, like a bubbling cauldron of, you think they're like, look, add an eye of Newt to it or something like that.
Oh, did the other packaging didn't work out? Is that not happening, or is that maybe happening?
I think that they're working on some alternatives because it had some issues in cold weather, the sort of alternative packaging.
Got it.
I never had a problem with it, but I wasn't playing around with it in the winter, and I think we sent it to some people who were like doing cruise ships in Alaska and testing it out, and they noticed a problem, which is why the alternative packaging, the like real convenient
in the shipping,
stow and go stuff.
Yeah, right. Because that was just a fun idea, but you know, sometimes fun ideas don't get to happen.
Well, let's get to the meat of the conversation this week that you and I got, which is I think
coin tricks. No.
We could talk about coin tricks in the future.
Sorry, no, I was just holding coins. So yeah, no. Yeah. What do you want to talk about?
How to make your close up and your walk around better? Because I think that like you know, I'm doing this restaurant all the time. And even though, like, sometimes I'm working out New Penguin stuff, sometimes I'm just playing the hits because I'm like tired or whatever, but I'm always looking for new ways to make my close up hit better. And just, you know, I get all these messages on Instagram like, hey, Eric, do you have any advice for, like, you know, like somebody new to doing close up magic, or I'm just starting my first restaurant gig. And I think this might be an area that you and I can, like, help, because, you know, we're out performing every week, you know, trying to get these big reactions for these things. And we might know some stuff that we can pass on to people.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, the first thing that comes to mind is, and it's so true for everything, it's just repetition. Mm-hmm. And just being conscious about what you're trying to do. Because if you're doing a trick and it's not where you want it to be, well, and you want to still do the trick, mm-hmm. well, you can't really judge it off of like one or two or three performances. You're going to have to get it. I'm not really sure about anything until I've done it at least probably 20 times, 10 to 20 times. And that also accounts for, like, I'm kind of confident on generally what I'm saying as well. Mm-hmm. You know, like the first 10 times I do it, I might be like, oh, wait a minute. No, I'm presenting this completely incorrect. Mm-hmm. Let me try it with this new frame or whatever. So mm-hmm. you gotta dig into it before you can even have an analysis on, like, is this trick any good and should I keep working on it? So repetition is, like, you got to have a spot where you can do it over and over and over and over again.
And part of that repetition, though, I think, is not being afraid to screw it up in front of someone.
Nobody cares. It's just a magic trick, right?
Like, I know on some level people are like, no, you should only perform the stuff you've perfected and known. But, like, if you're getting that, I think to your point, getting that flight time under your belt is important. And so there's only so much you can do in your bedroom, right?
Learn the trick so you can, like, get to the end of it.
But you'll discover things in reality, like in the real world situations, that you just, there's no way you could have predicted that. Like, you know, I was working on that Nicholas Lawrence anniversary hearts trick, and I discovered that because of the way the gimmick is constructed, if I'm, like, in the heat of the moment trying to get one of my lifts on it, the gimmick sort of inadvertently acted like a short card and made it hard to do a get ready for a double lift. So I had to spin it around. And it was one of those in my office when I was practicing it, I didn't have all those stressors on me, right? So it never was really an issue. But when I sort of got turned around in, you know, I got cameras on me, I got, you know, people that I got to, like, you know, come through for, that was something I learned. And the first couple times it didn't go right, but it doesn't ruin the trick and it doesn't ruin magic, right? Like, it's okay if you get caught. It's not the end of the world.
Yeah. Getting caught is a different discussion, but, like, mm-hmm. You can't ignore it. If you do, like, mm-hmm. don't pretend like you didn't. And even if they don't say anything, if you know that you did whatever out in the open and mm-hmm. you just assume they saw it, you know, you have to fix it. You just shake it off and do it correct the next table, or at least try to. I might not be the best person to ask on some of this stuff, only because my close-up is skewed these days. Like, mm-hmm. but here's, like, an example that also makes sense. Like, mm-hmm. so for example, Entourage.
Yeah.
Entourage is a great trick where somebody can name any queen, and that queen is eventually shown to be the only queen that even exists among the six cards that you showed them at the beginning.
Yeah.
So it's not only do they find the queen, but then it's the only one that's there. And I'm going out to film it to get performances, so that can usually be used in the demo video and in the tutorial and all that. And the problem that I run into after doing this trick a bunch of times is that nobody will say anything but the Queen of Hearts, right? Now, if that's you and you're out there bouncing around table to table, you don't really care. Like, in fact, you probably shouldn't even do an Entourage if you can force the Queen of Hearts verbally every time. You might as well just, like, stick that. I don't know. Do a miracle with that. But it's a problem for me because I need people on the video saying Queen of Clubs, Queen mm-hmm. of Spades, Queen of Diamonds, so that when you're watching it on Penguin, you're like, wait, you're not saying, wait a minute, is it really a fair choice of queen? Mm-hmm. Oh, no, these people said any queen they want. But So all of a sudden, like I'm like 10 reps in, 12 reps in on Entourage. Now instead, I'm trying to figure out how to get people to not say the Queen of Hearts, right? Which can be the same thing for you, I suppose, if you're like trying to force a suit in a particular trick. It's like you just have to pay attention to what you're saying. Why are they saying that mm-hmm. all the time? Is there anything I could be doing to maybe not have them name a heart or a, you know, the number three or whatever? And it's all these things can be solved, you know, if you're having an issue like that within your close-up magic based on what you're saying and what you're doing before and after.
It's an interesting exercise, though, because, you know, being able to force the Queen of Hearts verbally is a powerful skill to develop. But being able to eliminate those kinds of things allows you to sort of emphasize the impossibility with your spectator, where, you know, that sort of classic line of like, don't think of something common like the Ace of Spades or the Queen of Hearts, make it really random so that this is difficult for me. Well, then that sort of plants this seed in their head that they've changed their mind multiple times before they've even actually changed their mind. And it can make the end result significantly stronger.
Mm-hmm.
And so learning that kind of stuff, and then also learning to take advantage of the hits when it does happen.
Yeah. But I guess like to get to the, mm-hmm. like what how to make your close up magic stronger. Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, I always existed more. I've never really done a whole lot of restaurant stuff or like tableside walk around. I've done corporate walk around and things, but I always end up more in this like. I like to talk to them first, like as a human being.
Yeah.
yeah. First, I remember, like, I guess I kind of like learned this from like the Bob Sheets of the world. Like, you just kind of clowning around with them before the magic ever happens.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm reading Doc Eason's new book right now. Doc Tales and Cocktails.
Mm hmm.
And there's a great story in like the second or third chapter. So I didn't know Doc Eason didn't get into magic until he was in his 30s. And like,
I knew that. Yeah. Doc told me that.
But
yeah.
Like one of the first magicians he saw was Bob Sheets. And there's this story about Doc going to visit friends who opened the legendary Tower Bar in Colorado. And one of the things that like Bob was doing was just cutting up with people beforehand. So like someone would order a gin and tonic and he'd say, do you want a lime with that? And then they would say yes, because that's typically how you serve that drink. And so he would finger palm a lime wedge and then go into the garbage and be like, the guy forgot to cut the limes up. And so then he's like digging through the garbage and then he'll produce the one from finger palm and say, this one doesn't have too many teeth marks, squeeze it into their gin, put it on the side of the glass and serve it to him. Oh, it's a fresh lime, right? But like, that's a great bit of business in like just talking to them and getting them sort of off guard and on their back foot before you start to hit them with the miracles.
I never wanted to be just out with the card tricks right away. It would be I hated it when somebody would be like, show me a trick. Mm-hmm. Like it would just drive me nuts. I always tried to just steer the conversation to the trick. I don't read a ton of like the jerks, but like if you're interested in that type of stuff, I know that that's like a huge topic of discussion on that website all the time. Is making the magic tricks happen organically. But that's like also this whole other subset of things, because internally I was always dying to show you a card trick. I just wanted to start it on my terms, right? I know that the trick would be better if it started that way as opposed to the other way around, which is just a whole, you know, power play of groups type of thing, which it's crazy. It's all social dynamics. If you want to look into it, those are the types of things that taught me a lot about how to talk to people and how to understand like who you should be talking to in the group and how to talk to them and how to, you know, control a group of six people sitting at a bar together where you're the stranger, and it's all that type of stuff, which is fascinating to think about, and it's very applicable to magic.
But learning that stuff also allows you to learn to take advantage in the situation. I was talking about this a little bit in the meeting that we had earlier this week, But so I'm at Town Hall, and it's pretty popular with students at the Ohio State University. Not just Ohio State University, the Ohio State University.
It's trademarked.
And so new students are all given, they're given like a welcome package with like a bunch of OSU merch, right? So like shirts and hats and stuff. And they've started including, I don't have it here on my, but you know like those wallets that you stick to the back of your phone, like with double stick tape or a magnet or something? So it just could hold like your ID and a couple of credit cards or something. Well, OSU has been issuing that to students, and there's a cutout so that you can get it easier to pull your cards out, whether it's your ID or something like that. And I don't know if this was done intentionally or not, but I began to notice that when people would put their phones face down on the table, because they don't want to be disturbed with notifications or anything, that wallet would be on the back, and there's a, that cutout perfectly shows the name on the student ID. And so I was starting to do this thing where I would walk up and I would be mid-trick. And if I saw that, I would take advantage of that and go, oh, Michaela, do you want to pick a card? And they're immediately rocked back because I know their name. Right? And it's, but it's that like, it's not just taking advantage of that. It's being able to understand that if I'm open to information as it comes in, being able to present it on the fly gives me huge amounts of power. And I've started taking bigger and bigger risks with that so that I know that I have a trick that is going to blow them away, whether it's a triumph or an ambitious card or my coins across. But if I can, if I go for a hit and I miss, it's fine because I can still get other stuff. And so I've gotten more and more bold recently.
It's because it's your dojo, right? Like it's your... It's your room, right? Like,
it's not. Well, you, I'm doing that at like other gigs too. I had a corporate gig last night that I like went to and was doing stuff and started to do the same things, right? Like, I know that specific thing happens at Town Hall because I know the OSU students are going to be there. But now I'm looking for, like, last night I went for a hit where this woman was wearing a necklace that said Sophia on it. And so I was, so I just assumed that it might be her name. And so I said Sophia. And she was like, how did you know my name? Well, she's wearing the bloody thing on her neck, so it's like,
yeah, it's not the tricks that, like, if you're working the same place all the time, it's not about the tricks that you bring, but it's like, start thinking about how you can get the spectators' names before you go to the table. You know, there's little cracks in your venue somewhere that allow you to do miracles that only exist at your place, right? That aren't really even magic tricks, you know. So much of it is being able to talk to people like you're talking about, like dropping their name, just catching them off guard.
Yeah.
But it's going to really depend on where you're at and what you can do. I used to do it when I worked at Universal Studios, and this was like, it almost was like real magic, to be honest, but at the same time, not, because I just did so many damn shows. But states would come in trends to the park. So like the tourists that would be in the park at any given point would be typically from the same place. Either. So it'd be like Brazil week or, oh, this is the week Vermont's on school vacation.
Yeah.
So while you pick somebody random in the crowd and say, hey, what's your name? Where are you from? You don't know where they're from, but you know, odds are they're probably from New England because that's the school vacation week. And everybody else you've talked to this morning is also from New England. So you, I would take those stabs in the dark from time to time, you know, but then take it a step further. If you do know that, like if you know that everybody is from Brazil for the week, learn a couple things in Portuguese.
Yeah.
Right. And yeah, you only have it for the week, but that's where I was, right? I was doing 20 shows a day. So it was beneficial to me to say, a tuna bang, which I think is good day or something like that. I can't remember. But yeah, like it's just taking it that one step forward.
Yeah. Actually, the language thing is really good. I was learning Japanese for a while, and the one phrase that stuck with me is watashi wa nihongo ga sukoshi wakarimasu, which is I apologize, but I only speak a little bit of Japanese. And if I heard a word that I knew was Japanese from some tourists, I would drop that in, and they would light up and immediately start talking away at me in Japanese, and then I would have to say, oh, I'm sorry, that's the only phrase I know, and it would get a really good laugh. But it definitely broke the ice, and it eliminated that language barrier for the moment. I did that a few weeks ago with some deaf people. My partner Leslie speaks sign language, and I picked stuff up from her, and so I was able to sign to these people, and then I was able to have to go, "Oh, stop, I can't do that. Is anyone hearing here? Can you translate my words to the rest of the group?" And it was, but it definitely like set them at ease because I was trying to meet them in their language.
Hmm. Those are the things, man.
Yeah.
Those are the things. Easy ones that I used to, that I started with back in the day were, like, it's just about being able to say, "Hi, what's your name?"
Mm-hmm.
And then like, "Where are you from?" And then being able to have something to say, something to offer. Like an easy one back in the day was just knowing, all the slogans on all the state's license plates.
Oh yeah.
Which was a fun one. You already know more than you think, you know, and, but it was always just a fun one to say, or you offer them information about their state that they don't know. Mm-hmm. Like actually I learned a funny one last night. Did you know in Australia, at the end of happy birthday, they sing "Hip Hip Hooray"?
Okay.
And I also learned, because it was some comedian, it was a comic bit, Australians don't realize that they're only people that do that. So if you were to meet somebody from Australia, you could say something like, "Did you know that nobody else in the world sings Hip Hip Hooray after happy birthday?" And you'll probably blow their mind without showing them a card trick. Right. So,
that's
the strongest stuff, right? Like, that's the strongest stuff.
Well, you know, though, like, you know what I've seen you do a couple of times that, like, I know that among sort of like some magicians, it's pretty fashionable to like not know anything about sports, right? Like, I don't know anything about football or, you know, sports ball or what you call it. But like, I've seen you just off the cuff be like, "Oh, you're from Miami," and then like list some sports stat or some random thing from a game you saw recently. And it grabs that like instant shared connection. And so I've started paying attention a little bit to sports, especially like at Town Hall, they're showing OSU games there. So I know the names of players now, or like, "Oh man, this crazy thing happened."
Yeah. I mean, you'd be crazy not to, if you're nothing but OSU people all the time. Like if you're dropping, especially if you drop some obscure ones, like, you know, people are passionate about different stuff around there.
Yeah.
If you knew the people on the wrestling team or the swimming team kicked ass last weekend. Did you see that?
Yeah.
What? No, I didn't know. Like, you're all of a sudden more knowledgeable than they are about the stuff that they should be interested in.
Well, and I still don't have any particular interest in football. As everyone who listens to this show knows, it's robot combat all the way for me. But knowing that stuff about football has made me able to be more ingratiating and charming and interesting to these people, so that now they're more interested in the magic.
You don't even have to have a real, you know, we just talked about not knowing languages but speaking languages. Mm-hmm. And you know, I don't know anything about birthday parties in Australia, but but when you have that one little nugget of information to share, it's the same thing as a magic trick. Trick is just sharing something that nobody's seen before. It has a surprise at the end of it as well, but those are the things. If you start off on that foot, your magic's going to be stronger.
It really is. I think that's the thing that like gets cut out of the demos that people see us in, is that what they don't see in the demo, but you do see it in the live performances, is how we ingratiate ourselves to the audience when we're out, like, walk. Cause it's what we walk up to strangers and the spiel is like, "Hey, I work for a local film crew that brings magicians from all over the world to perform magic for people. We film it for YouTube. Would you like to see some magic tricks tonight?" There's no coaching these people. There's no like, "Hey, when you see this, can you flip out?" Like, and you
know, yeah. And even when they say yes, they're not quite realizing like, yes, they knew it was going to be filmed, but then the cameras are there and it's like, "Oh, wait a minute. What are we doing?" You know, so there's a lot of hurdles to jump through.
We got to settle them down before they actually see the stuff.
Yeah. I always say it like, my close-up magic has been warped by Penguin, because I just have to like perform under different circumstances that aren't really like normal. Mm-hmm. Not like if you went and did anything else. So a lot of the things that I have to think about, like how to get people to say the Queen mm-hmm. of Clubs, or, you know, oh, I need to get this particular line out of my mouth cleanly mm-hmm.
yeah.
because we want that part in the demo later.
Yeah.
You know, stuff that you just wouldn't ever have to worry about, or being followed around by a film crew, right? it's a different story, but
yeah.
the biggest thing I can offer is definitely just like learning a little bit more about how to talk to anybody.
Yeah.
And there's lots of books out there that if you've never read one of those types of books, it'll probably blow your mind because you have something to apply it to. You know, it just instantly can be applied to your close-up magic.
Asking anyone about themselves is like a key, because like that's the most interesting topic to anyone else is themselves. So if you get someone talking about themselves, you can start to pick things up and really go from there and look for those shared points of common interest that you can latch onto.
Here's another one that I used to do. I don't know if I think I talked about this in my Penguin Live lecture or something. I can't remember, but and like you can do it because you're, well, basically if you're at the same place all the time and you get people that come back.
Yeah.
When I first saw David Blaine do the signed card and beer bottle, mm-hmm. I had no method. Well, and because as we know, David Blaine did it for real. Like the card dematerialized and reformed inside of the beer bottle somehow.
There's no question that that man has actual powers. But for
right.
for a lesser being like you or I, who had yeah. to resort to sleight of hand or chicanery.
So when I was, you know, 19 trying to figure this out, and eventually 21, or maybe I've been in the bar before then, who knows. But I realized the only way that would be possible would be to get somebody to sign their name on the same card twice. Mm-hmm. And so I used to save every signed card I had, and I used to put them in, if I went out and did magic at Bevy B's in Salisbury Beach, mm-hmm. I would go home that night, take those signed cards out, and throw them in like a little card container that said Bevy B's.
Oh, that's brilliant.
And then I would go to Bevy B's, mm-hmm. and you know, the next week, I would bring those cards. Now, two things happen now. One, this is like early iPhone notes, right?
Yeah.
Where it's like, here are the people I met at Bevy B's tonight. Instead, I have a packet of cards that have people's names on them. And I'm like, wait a minute. Wasn't that? That's Steve. I have Steve's card right yeah. here. Now, if you force a clean version of that card on Steve, tell him to sign it. One, Steve don't remember he picked that same card 2 weeks earlier. He's too excited to see you again. And two, he signs it damn near close to the same exact way.
Oh yeah.
Which was always hilarious. And I used to do the signed card to beer bottle. I'm sure there's other miracles that you could do in such a situation, but that was the only one I knew at the time, was the beer bottle trick, which is a very appropriate trick for the bar. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I used to do that, which now is the equivalent of me taking out my iPhone. If I need to remember people, mm-hmm. I'll write, you know, the topic of the note is usually the venue.
Yeah.
You know, so if I need to remember, I do it all the time. If I go to a new restaurant in town, or I'm like, oh, I'm coming back here and the server was cool and the bartender was cool or whatever. I just open up my notes and throw their names in, because if you show up and start throwing names around, I mean, especially if you show them a trick or something, they're not going to forget you. You know, so if you walk in and they're like, oh, the magician's back, and you're like, Stacy, how you been? Mm-hmm. You're going to blow their mind.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah.
It's all these little tricks, man.
We didn't talk about any tricks, but
no, you know. No. But these are like, these no. are the things. These are the things that we
those need. Are the things that I do.
Yeah. All right, man.
Doc Easton did that to me.
Oh, he did?
Yeah. And I don't, he probably doesn't even remember, but like, I know Doc is big on names. Doc was like, obviously he was big on, for me, when watching his bar magic DVDs. And one of the things he does on there is the multiple selection, where he finds everybody's card and remembers everybody's name mm-hmm. at the same time, which is something I do to this day. But, he was coming to Wizards Magic Theater in Orlando, and I was so excited, 'cause I was like, I can't believe I'm going to see Doc Easton. Mm-hmm. For the first time, I was on his mailing list, which is, I think, how I knew, and saw the show. And then after the show, I got introduced to Doc, and he said, I said, "Hey, I'm Nick." And he said, "Oh, you a magician?" Mm-hmm. And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Is it Nick LaCapo?" Which blew my mind.
Yeah.
I'm like, "Yeah, how the hell do you know that?" And he's like, "Well, it's because you're the only Nick on my mailing list that I haven't met yet." I'm like, "Is that true?"
Yeah.
Is that, like, did he really? Maybe. Because, I mean, for that one moment, he knows the impact that had mm-hmm. on me. But I don't know. Yeah, it's mind-blowing to think that that's the case. But, shit, I don't know.
People got to check Doc stuff out. It's so good.
Doc's the best.
Yeah. He's amazing.
Yeah, Doc's the best. Yeah.
And go check out his book, Doctails and Cocktails. It's pretty good. I think you can get it from his website.
Rocky Mountain Magic.
Yeah.
Has he still got that?
I think he does. Yeah.
Yeah.
Some great stories in there.
Doc's one of the best. I haven't seen him in a long time.
I've gotten to hang out with him a little bit. Like, we did PCAM convention together, and then shortly thereafter, we were at the castle together. He was in the bar while I was in the close-up gallery. And I would go down, and he was in the bar for 2 weeks, which they don't normally do. They usually only open the bar on the weekends. But when Doc's in town, that bar is open every night.
Yeah.
And I went
Doc's
down.
He's on my Mount Rushmore. He's in my top five,
I'd say. Yeah.
It might be maybe top three.
Just crushing him all night.
Yeah. Yeah. He's.
All right, man. I think we're going to kick it over to the main event now. I got Chris Rose and his cohorts from Magicians on a Mission. We're going to switch over to an interview. These are people who go out and perform for the troops in combat zones. So these guys are going out to, like, military bases in Afghanistan and Iraq and all over the place. And they're performing for the troops. So they're doing some really, really cool stuff. And so it'll be interesting to talk about.
Hell yeah. Well. Yeah. I'll look forward to hearing it.
Absolutely. Nick, thanks for joining me as always. And everyone else, we'll get over to the main event. Thanks as always to Nick for joining me on the show. Remember, we love hearing from the viewers on potential topics for us to discuss. Send your suggestions to our customer service line or directly to me on Instagram. Contact details at the end of the show. On to the main event. Chris Rose runs one of the only three entertainment organizations that sends entertainers to combat zones to entertain troops in the U.S. military. Magicians on a Mission has direct contact with thousands of American service members that are out there at the sharp end of the stick. This kind of moral support can be crucial in reducing the adverse side effects of the trauma soldiers experience on the front lines. I wanted to have Chris and his cohort on the show to discuss this important work, and now you get to join our conversation. Chris Rose, Jason Wethington, and Gary Michael Hamm, all of Magicians on Mission. Thank you so much for joining me here on the Penguin Magic Podcast. Before we get into it, let's start. Chris Rose, would you mind introducing yourself to our audio listeners?
Yeah, I am Chris Rose, founder, president, CEO, and magician for Magicians on Mission.
And then Jason Wethington, would you mind introducing yourself?
Absolutely. I'm Jason Wethington, and I'm the director of marketing for Magicians on Mission. I'm also a magician and a consultant for them as well.
And Gary Michael Hamm, would you mind introducing yourself to our audio listeners?
Hi, guys. I'm Gary Michael Hamm. I serve as the military liaison for Magicians on Mission.
Excellent. Well, I'm super excited to talk about this because I have family members who've been in the military. My great grandfather was my great great grandfather was a balloonist in World War I, and he is obliquely mentioned in the Dayton Air Force Museum as one of the only balloonists who was captured as a prisoner of war. Maybe I'll get into that story later, but it's very snarky. It's like, you know, no balloonists were captured except for this one guy, and then there's a photo.
I'm gonna excuse myself for a second. My wife's cat is being challenging, so let me remove her from the area. I'll be right back.
No problem. this is the perils of live podcasting is
right.
Animals. Yeah, unfortunately, the listeners are used to my dogs interrupting frequently. So we'll wait for Chris Rose to get back. But that is true. He was a balloonist during the First World War. And so go up in a balloon and spot for artillery, and his tether got cut. So he drifted over into enemy lines, was an evadee for a few weeks, and then got captured. And the end of World War I was not like the end of World War II. The Germans just sort of opened the camps, and he walked back across Europe to get home. So,
wow.
Oh. You know,
Yeah, that's it's interesting stuff. But that's not wow. We're here to talk about my history. We're here to talk about Magicians on Mission. Chris, would you mind informing our listeners as to what's going on?
Absolutely. So to have a better understanding of what we're doing, really, it starts with our why. And the why is because our service members deserve our support. So in 2017, I had been invited to my first tour with what's called the Armed Forces Entertainment. And I was invited by Phoenix magician and comedian by the name of Bob Kubota, and found myself on a team of performers. So there were five travelers on that particular tour. So Bob was our tour manager and MC. Jim Leach was our opening act. I was second act. Third was David Malik, and our closer and headliner was Michael Finney. And we visited Kuwait, Bahrain, UAE, and Djibouti, Africa. And when I got the invitation from Bob, my knee-jerk reaction was, yes. And then we got into details. So 2 days into that particular tour, I looked at Bob and I said, why aren't we here all the time? Not only is this amazing for us as performers, but even more so for our service members. It became, so why, yeah, basically I looked at Bob and I was like, why aren't we here all the time? Prior to this particular tour, even though I'm the product of a multi-generational military family, I myself did not serve, but I was taught things like honor and respect for those that do. So when I was invited, it was an immediate yes. And then the performances were amazing. The audiences were some of the best audiences I've ever performed for. And again, it was like, okay, you guys have been doing this for 20 years. Why am I just now hearing about it? And how can we do this more? So yeah, what I've come to realize looking back is it really stems from the idea that we can go beyond just saying the words, thank you for your service. Mm-hmm. And so it took me a couple of years to kind of get my ducks in a row in order to be able to start this project. And in early 2019, Jason and I were effectively reevaluating my career. And we kind of circled back to performing for the military. And I've now found myself on this path. We became an official 501c in mid-July 2019. And what we do is we put together tour groups of magicians, similar to the one that I was on in 17. And we send them overseas to perform for our active duty military. And we do essentially two main styles of performance. We do close-up. Mm-hmm. So that's where we can go anywhere, be anything, dining facility, firehouse, hospital, wherever it is that we can be, the guard shack, smoke pits, wherever it is that we can be to show close-up magic. And then we also provide a 90-minute interactive stage magic show with our entire team for larger audiences. So anywhere from 40 people on up to like 400 or 500, depending on the location. And afterwards, we do a meet and greet where we get an opportunity to look our service members in the eyes and say thank you. I personally offer free hugs after every single one of my shows. Mm-hmm. And it's surprising to me how many people just want some sort of a physical connection, be it a high five, a handshake, a hug. Mm-hmm. And you know, recently came to the realization that I'm more just a delivery boy of that hug because they're not really hugging me. Mm-hmm. They're hugging the people that are not only supporting us, but by proxy, they're hugging their family, the people that they're missing, you know, that kind of connection, that human connection is what they're really looking for. Mm-hmm. So, and we also provide a gift box with items from our sponsors and branded items from us. Like, here, I'll show you. Let's see here. Oh, wrong one. I don't know why this is giving me such
pause behind the curtain.
There it is. There we go. So we have our morale patch, our hat pins, challenge coins, stickers. We're looking at getting into a deck of cards that was designed by Marine veteran Jaron Hansen. Mm-hmm. But that kind of segues us into something that we can talk about later, and that's that company. But we'll talk about that in a little bit. Mm-hmm. But there you go. So that's kind of the basics of what it is that we do. Mm-hmm. We're looking at doing as many as 24 of these tours on an annual basis. That's our goal.
When you say 24 tours, how long is a tour?
A tour is approximately 16 days.
Okay.
We visit anywhere from 1 to 4 countries, of course, depending on the region of the world that we're in. We perform for approximately 2,500 to 3,000 service members per tour. And we do, a ton.
16-day tours. I mean, I'm presuming you're producing multiple tours at a time, because that equates to like more than a year of time on the road.
Correct.
Yeah.
So the way that we've kind of figured out the timing is that as one group is coming home, another group is already headed out.
Okay.
So there's just a little bit of overlap. We're not performing every single day of those 16 days because there are travel days included. Mm-hmm. there are usually on a 16-day tour, we're anywhere between 10 and 12 like evening performances. Mm-hmm. So there's some travel time in between, depending, of course, on where we are in the region. So,
and yeah. Who are some of the magicians that our listeners would recognize that are going out on these tours?
So right now, our roster, or the gentleman that I've toured with, first tour was Jim Leach, Bob Kubota, David Malik, and Michael Finney. The second tour that we did in 19 was Bob Kubota, Jim Leach, myself, Christopher Tracy, the late Christopher Tracy, and Justin Rivera. We just did a tour in 22 for the AFE as well. And that was, I played the role of tour manager on that one, and MC, Jim Leach, Joe Turner, Bill Cook, and Justin Rivera were on those ones. With our inaugural tour, we're going to be bringing in some new faces, including Jason Weddington and Gary Hamm, who you'll hear from a little bit later on. But yeah, so those are a few.
We're, I'm going to get to Jason in just a minute, but Gary, you're the military liaison?
Yes, sir.
What does that entail?
Well, it's basically a language assistant. Mm-hmm. Military is a completely different structured beast, and navigating it as a civilian is difficult. It's challenging. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
So I served for 20 years in the Navy, retired honorably, and it's my second language.
Yeah.
So my job is to help navigate through any possible hurdles, issues that may pop up, make the right introductions, uphold the chain of command on both sides, the military and magicians on mission, mm-hmm. and uphold our ethics and standards for both sides, including for our sponsors. So.
And Jason, you're the marketing director, so you're helping to bring in sponsors and create brand deals and awareness and things.
Exactly. I kind of think about it right now, because we're a small team, we all wear multiple hats, and sometimes we're all wearing the same hat at the same time. We're kind of under one big hat. Mm-hmm. So I really feel it's a team thing. But yeah, basically my job is to kind of uphold the brand, kind of exactly what Gary was talking about, the ethics and standards of our organization, but doing that through all of the different forms of communication. I'm from the, you know, marketing is everything that you do. Mm-hmm. School, it's, you know, all of your inside facing, outside facing language, mm-hmm. Images, you know, all of those different forms of communication. And and also interfacing with the outside organizations, making sure that we align fundamentally in what it is that we're trying to do, because we're very focused on the mission at hand, which is getting entertainers to these military installations, entertaining those really courageous people that are over there serving, mm-hmm. you know, these long extended service contracts. So yeah, that's kind of what I do. I make sure that we are all on the same page working towards that.
And I imagine this probably goes without saying, but Magicians on Mish is an apolitical organization. It's not right or left. It's really more about bringing entertainment to these people who are at the sharp end of the stick.
Like, fundamentally, I think it's about the improving the overall mental health and physical well-being of our service members in a very unique way, utilizing magic and the power that magic has to take people out of the moment that they're in the situation that they're in, and create these ripple effects, in their psyches. And we hear it over and over and over again from the service members how important and necessary what we're doing is for them. And it's, you know, fundamentally, it's like showing up and showing that we care. Mm-hmm. And that's just a human being thing.
Yeah.
And that's really what we're trying to bring. Magic is unique, I think, in most art forms or artistic expressions, in that it creates a very deep human connection. And it's more active than music. It's more active than appreciating a painting or a sculpture, or even sitting in theater and experiencing a live play, because it blurs the lines of reality and physics, and it forces the person watching to go into sort of creativity mode and create those synapses. They sparkle. You're trying to solve an impossibility that you just witnessed, and you're going to think about that, and you're going to tell other people about it. And it has this weird way of, you know, propagating. It's really quite fascinating. So yeah, fundamentally, that's what we're there for. And it's totally apolitical. It's 100% human based.
Yeah. Just like the military is apolitical.
Yeah.
We talk politics. In fact, it doesn't even matter to us at that point. What matters is the guys and gals to the left and right of us. Mm-hmm. And you know, what Jason says about when anybody in civilian clothes shows up in a combat zone, it's a breath of fresh air. Really? It's like, what are you doing here? What's going on in the world, man?
Yeah.
And when they show up, for instance, a USO tour or Magicians on Mission, man, that's sharing some love. And military folks really appreciate that. We learn to read right through language barriers, and we read body language. We're able to tell who's being honest and who's telling fibs pretty easily after a while. And when we see folks like USO, Magicians on Mission, the other one, Gary Sinise Foundation, there's only three of us that actually travel overseas to entertain the troops.
Is that true? What? Sorry, I didn't mean that to sound like I was questioning you. I was more sort of in shock that there's not more.
You'd think that there would be more. However, there's a lot of organizations that support, but they support from here in the United States, continental United States.
Oh, okay.
There's only three that actually deploy with the sole purpose of entertainment for the troops. And that USO, Gary Sinise, and us.
Is that because it is logistically very difficult to
take? It is very logistically difficult, but there's also, you know, and I commend everybody for this, especially the folks on my own team first, there's a level of courage that you have to undertake going overseas into a more threatening environment than it may be here in the United States.
I mean, these are effectively combat zones that you're...
Yeah, I was going to say combat zone, but here's the thing is, for instance, we were supposed to go on a tour starting, I believe it was March 14th, Kuwait and Iraq. But because of all the recent activity, things had to be postponed.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean about combat zone. Yes, we'll go out to the forward operating bases and to the established bases in basically combat zones, what most civilians would call a combat zone. Mm-hmm. However, the military, rightly so, doesn't want to get any entertainers hurt.
Yeah.
So they're not going to put you in a high threat area or directly on the front lines, or navigate you through a spot that's particularly risky. It's not going to happen. It just wouldn't be a good thing at all.
But even then, even if they're taking you to lower risk environments, that's not to say that there isn't any risk. I mean, America,
there's always a risk. Yeah, there's always a risk. That's one of my jobs. It's one of the things that I did after I retired from the Navy. I worked for the State Department and some other agencies providing high risk personal protection to our dignitaries and other folks over in Iraq and Afghanistan. So that kind of thing's right down my alley. And one of the things that we do before we deploy is go through things like cultural awareness, mm-hmm. and, you know, learning about what's the best hotel to stay in and what floor to be on in the hotel, mm-hmm. things to look for, things to stay away from, just a good briefing prior to going over. And hopefully, and with me on the team, it'll definitely happen. They'll be more like me as well. Going over with someone that already has a savvy, that's already been there, like Chris, for instance, and Michael, Vinny, and some of the other folks, it helps. It really helps. Even here in the States, it helps to go with somebody that's already been there. So,
yeah. Yeah. Chris, what is a typical day on one of these tours look like?
A typical day. it does vary, that's for sure. I guess I could share some stories from our last tour. So in 2022, AFE took us into Kuwait and Jordan. Mm-hmm. And at that time, Kuwait was still asking for PCR tests. So they couldn't be any more than 48 hours old. And part of our team met up in New York. Justin Rivera flew out of California and went to Dallas. Both Justin and myself got stuck. And you were talking about new team members. I had two new guys. So Jim, Joe M. Turner, and Bill Cook, we all met in New York. My test results still hadn't come through yet, and they denied me access to the plane. So I handed them a bunch of stuff, and I felt really nervous about it because the only person that had any experience was Jim. And so they got there before we did. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, generally what happens is we get up in the morning. We usually have some sort of a guide, somebody from the military. It's usually somebody from the MWR department. Mm-hmm. MWR stands for Morale, Welfare, Recreation. And they're the ones that generally handle the logistical side from the military side in having entertainers out. Mm-hmm. So our guides usually take us to the dining facility, and then they give us a tour of the area that we're currently in. Sometimes we do what are called special unit visits. This is where the close-up magic comes into play, where we go to either the firehouse or the canine unit. Like, I've personally been taken down twice now by military trained canine during one of those unit visits, which is fantastic. It's so fun. And then we usually stay with that unit afterwards, and we bring the rest of the unit together outside of the demonstration, and we do a close-up show. So we do kind of a round robin close-up show where each one of us that wants to perform can have an opportunity to perform. And then we invite them to the evening show later that night or the next day, whenever it is that evening show is scheduled. And sometimes that close-up show, that unit visit, is really the only time that some of the members of that unit will interact with us, mm-hmm. because the evening show is, they're still on duty, so they're just unable to make it, right? They still have a job to do. So we do dining facilities, the guard shacks. Here's so when we were coming, we were in Jordan, and we were staying at a place called the JTC. It stands for Joint Training Center. That was our home for a little over a week. a little over a week. But our unit visits were, hour and a half drive away, 2-3 hours away. We would go and we would do the unit visits and the evening show at a what's called an FOB or a forward operating battalion or base. And we'd perform there, and then we would stay. They would drive us back, and we would stay at the JTC. On our way back one night, it was super late at night. I think it was like 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning by the time we got to the gate. And the guys were like, you guys are clear to go, but we're not letting you until you do it, you show us a trick. And so we rolled open the van door, and Joe happened chance to be sitting in the spot, and he literally just turned his chair and started doing tricks for the whole, I think it was like five or six guys on guard duty that night. And that's one of the unique things that I love about what it is that we do, is that we can perform at the drop of a hat, anybody, anywhere, anytime. The tours can be somewhat grueling and very, very tiring. That's why we try and limit them to as much as 16 days. But it's well worth it. And we get to perform anywhere, which is great. Unlike some of the other forms of entertainment, you know, we're not a band, so we don't have to drag the drum set with us, you know, wherever we're going. And yeah, so that's always fun. Then, go ahead. You were asking the typical day. So they fed us a ton because they're used to feeding all of their service members. They use all of that they're consuming. I had to learn how to eat on tour because every time I turned around, they were like, oh, it's breakfast time. It's lunchtime. It's dinner time. You guys want a snack? You know, whatever it was. I actually had to learn how to eat, take smaller portions because they were feeding us all the time. But generally go have a meal, do another unit visit, and then we go and get set up for the evening program. Again, that's a 90-minute interactive magic show. Each one of our performers gets about 20 minutes on stage. And then after that, we do the meet and greet, where we give our gift box away, we shake hands, we take pictures, we sign autographs. And then usually we just end up spending time in that building, or we end up going to, like, if they have a bar, then we end up going there, or we end up in usually some sort of a public place and end up interacting with our service members while they're just winding down for the night, or some of them are just waking up. That's like their morning routine, and they're, you know, off to their job. And then we hit the rack and we do it all again the next day. So yeah, it's fun.
I view this as very, very important work. I tend to take the John Stewart view of things like this, where you can agree or disagree with where they are or why they're there, but at the end of the day, that's not their choice. They're not the people who deserve any of that, because they deserve to be helped and take care of, you know, before, during, and after their service.
Absolutely.
And so, I mean, you know, I'd throw my hat in the ring. If you ever want me to go on one of these tours, I'd love to do it.
Absolutely.
That'll be awesome. That brings up a really good point at this point is, yes, Eric, we would love to have you be a part of our team and go through our like recruiting process that we have. Right now, we're not currently actively recruiting because we are still in the process of fundraising.
Yeah.
Our goal with this organization is to be able to provide these services for free to our service members. So wherever it is that we show up, if you're on installation and you're active, you're a commander, you're a civilian contractor, you're an allied force that's staying on installation as well, it's like doors are open. You know, come in, enjoy, laugh, relax, you know, have a good time with us. But yeah, at this point, we're in the fundraising process. So not to put too fine a point on it, but it ain't cheap to do this.
that brings me to, I think, an important point, which is how can the listeners help you?
The listeners can help in a couple of different ways now, and we're super excited to share one of them. But number one, we're looking for reoccurring or sustaining donors or supporters. So they can go onto our website, magiciansonmission.org. And there's a donate button, and you can choose a one-time donation, a monthly donation. We have quarterly or annually available as well. And right now, we're projecting approximately $176 per service member is what it costs us to be able to provide this service.
Wow.
So we have some donors that are here for, you know, $5 a month because that's what they can do. Mm-hmm. We have some other donors that are into, you know, 50 plus a month. And we've had some really generous, like one-time donations as well. But as a sustaining member, you also get access to some of our social media and some other inside information, being a part of our, you know, like our mailing list. So we share some of the things that are either coming up or what's going on. And then the other thing that's really exciting right now is that we get to another way that your listeners can support us is by going on to magiciansonmission.org/bicycle cards.
Okay.
We just brought bicycle playing cards on as a sponsor. Oh. They are going to, yes, we're very excited about this, and we get to announce it at the beginning of May. So I don't know when this particular podcast is going to come out. So it's probably already going to be announced by the time this comes out, which is great. They are offering some special deals on their website. So you can get to our story on our website, and then there will be a link back to bicycleplayingcards.com. They haven't said their URL yet that they want to do, but I believe it's going to be bicyclecards.com/magiciansonmission. And with that, they'll have a special section just for us that has some special deals on their new tactical playing cards.
Oh.
Yeah, so they've, here, let's see. Here's kind of a...
Yeah.
Well, there's a little, you can see it. So they've created now four different colors of tactical decks. Their new ones are black and blue.
Yep.
And the cool thing about those is the fact that you can play cards, do magic tricks and all that kind of stuff and still read them with night vision goggles. And not have to worry about being picked out of the dark. So there you go.
Which, you know, is in, I don't know about your gigs, but my gigs, that is tremendously important.
Very important.
Yes, it's very important. So, yeah. So if you want to support us through that, you can get a tactical deck. They are also looking at doing a couple of like rider back bundles. Mm-hmm. So for red and blue rider back playing cards, they're doing a revenue share with us. So part of the proceeds from the sales of those bundles on that page will come back directly to Magicians on Mission. So it's kind of a bonus, for a two-way bonus. As a magician, I get the supplies that I want to use for my show, and I get to support a really good cause. Or you can just come directly straight to us. So
that up to you. That is tremendous to hear. Thanks so much for sharing your story with us. And we've got some links in the show description below for folks to go and participate. Is there anything else that anyone needs to know before we sign off?
I don't know. Jay, do we get everything?
I think so. The only other thing I would add is another way to support the organization is we are looking for sponsors. Mm-hmm. We're looking for additional sponsors. So if you know of an organization or you're part of an organization that is aligned with what it is that we're doing, have them reach out, and we're more than happy to have a conversation with them about that and see how we can work together on our mission to support the troops.
Well, Jason, Gary, Chris, thanks so much for joining us here on the podcast. And for everyone listening, go check out the links in the show description below to see how you can help and support getting live entertainment out to the folks out in the field on the sharp end of the stick. Thanks again for joining us here on the Penguin Magic Podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks, Eric. Thank you.
That's going to do it for this week, kids. Thanks so much to Chris et al. For joining us on the show, and thanks to you for listening. One quick correction. At the time of recording, Magicians on a Mission was not accepting applicants to work on tours. They are now actually beginning the audition process. Check out their site in the show description to find out more about how you can contribute. As always, we're a weekly podcast, so be sure to like and subscribe, as well as share your favorite episodes on the social media site that you've been showing off your latest LEGO creations on. If you wanted to reach out to me about anything on this week's show, you'll have to slip me a note through the unholy mix of LEGO sculptures, control
controlled by Alexa that now permeate my house. I'm building robots, y'all, and Alexa controls them. Don't be shocked if Sarah Connor comes looking for me. But if building a Lego Skynet isn't your cup of tea, you can always hit me up on Instagram at Eric Tate. That's at E-R-I-K-T-A-I-T from me and everyone else here at the P3 Magic Studios. Practice, practice, perform.